The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Yes, indeed. Good morning. You're very welcome along to the programme. It is Friday, the 20th of March, 2025, and we are broadcasting live today from beautiful, sunny Buncrana. It's the launch of the Plaza Youth Club and Cafe, which is this evening at 7pm. But there's lots coming up over the course of the next couple of hours focused on this venue, and also letting you know what's coming up here a little later on in the day. So stay tuned for that. I'll introduce our Friday panel to you very shortly, but first, I want to invite you to get involved in the conversation. If you want to WhatsApp and text us, it's 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. You can give us a call too on 074 91 25000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And don't forget, you can watch today's show as you can every single day live here from Buncrana by hopping on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, where you can stream us on your smart devices or your smart screen TV in the corner or on the wall of your front room. And we're also across Facebook and on the X platform. Right, let's say good morning to our panel. We have Deputy Padraig McLaughlin, Sinn Féin Chief Whip and Spokesperson on Fisheries and the Marine. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
And we also have with us Councillor Fionnán Bradley, Lasca Cathaoirleach of the Inishowen Municipal District.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your
you
listeners.
With us. Yes, indeed. And joining us remotely is Dr. Peter O'Rourke, former consultant orthopaedic surgeon. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping?
Not too bad. Enjoying retirement.
Are you? Are you retired?
Oh, I am.
Okay. Right, we're waiting with bated breath, I suppose, to find out what the government may do to try and ease the spiralling fuel prices that we are seeing. Padraig McLaughlin, I know your party had its own proposals in relation to this. What are you anticipating from the government, and how big a difference do you believe it might make?
Well, the first thing to say is they've been really slow to move on this. It's almost 3 weeks. People have been faced with their home heating oil has doubled, and in Donegal, uniquely, our people rely on home heating oil to heat their homes. So it's had a real tough impact on people in Donegal. Obviously, petrol and diesel prices are increasing all the time. I think they will have increased about 20 cents by tonight and within 24 hours. You know, so it's a huge impact. What needs to happen is they need to implement the legislation introduced by Piers Doherty, and they need to reduce the excise tax very seriously, not increase carbon tax.
Yeah, and that's in May, and a lot could happen between now and May, but I understand where that call's coming from. But at this point, are the proposals that Sinn Féin had enough? Because what, it might bring it down from 240 to 220? You know, I mean, we're in a completely different space to when that those proposals were drafted.
European law limits what you can reduce excise tax by, so we've done it by the maximum permitted by European law, and that's one of the challenges, and the government need to do the same. They need to follow, you know, I mean, I just found it exasperating this week in the Dáil. I really didn't think we'd be coming back. I thought the government would bring in, they can literally do it overnight. So I thought they'd bring in emergency legislation on Wednesday, the day after St. Patrick's Day when we returned. They could have recalled the Dáil last week, of course. They can do that any time. So for me, it's just far too slow, the response. And I suspect that when the government take the initiative, it won't be at the level that we've asked for.
So do you have off the top of your head an idea of if it was done at the level Sinn Féin is calling for, what difference it would actually make per litre?
Yeah, it would reduce diesel by 25 cents.
You see, that's my point. We could be by Monday, and this is maybe why the government's taking its time, reducing diesel by €2.50 to €2.25. That's not really easing the problem.
I think there's also an argument, I mean, for our governments to make the case at European level to look at these limits whenever you have, I mean, obviously we have a world where Donald Trump joins a war criminal like Netanyahu, tears up the rule book of international law and destabilizes the entire Middle East, impacts on your oil. So, you know, these are, I mean, we've had it now, obviously, a number of years ago where Putin, invaded Ukraine, the same sort of mentality as I see now with Trump and Netanyahu. But it has big impacts across the world. So I think we need to look at that European limit. But unfortunately, we can only work within those parameters for now.
Yeah. Finan, what do you think? Has the government been too slow to move? Like, I think in fairness, you know, we saw a situation where diesel went above and then below 2 euro, and maybe there's some logic to waiting to see where it might fall at before making a big decision. I'm not sure that's the government's motivation, but it might work into their favour. But what do you think?
Yeah, well, it's vitally important that whatever interventions are taken are targeted and will help those that are struggling the most, the low-income
families.
Well,
they're not proposing targeted, if we're talking about a reduction of reduction in the cost of fuel, it's not targeted, it's universal.
No, but I want to make sure that those that are hit the hardest by the increased costs in diesel and in home heating oil, that they are protected and that they are helped the most. Mm. And listen, this situation has been evolving nearly by the hour since the first attack on Iran. And let's be quite clear and honest here. What has taken place is clear price gouging. I mean, we have a 90-day supply of oil in this country, and I think it wasn't even 12 hours after the first attack, all of a sudden the prices started to shoot up through the roof. And that's just scandalous. There's no absolutely no excuse for that.
It is scandalous, but it is the way the industry works. They, and it's no secret, they set the price to what it would cost to replenish the diesel and petrol and home heating oil that they're selling right now. Whether they should do that or not, but you could look at small operators in Donegal who would not make enough money to refill their tanks if they didn't increase their prices. I don't like it, the listeners don't like it, but that's the way it works.
Yeah, and look, I want to be very clear that some small businesses, many small businesses are struggling at the minute. The independent filling stations that you have right throughout the county and right throughout the country. And what has been done is very, very unfair on them, because they might be bearing the brunt of the frustration of the customer at the pump, because they're the public facing side of the service. But it's the larger companies that are supplying them. And I really do want to see something done about that we don't come back the next time there's some sort of an international crisis, because this is the second time now in 3 or 4 years that we've been hit with a crisis like this.
But the government had those industry leaders in for a meeting and nothing really came of it.
Yeah, no, and listen, there's no question about it. We need tough action on this. The time for talk is over. It is action that we need, and I'm delighted with the confirmation that at the next cabinet meeting on Tuesday, we are going to get a very clear indication of exactly what the government is going to do. I don't know what decisions will be taken, and I wouldn't like to preempt anything, but on Tuesday, both the Taoiseach and Tánaiste have made it clear that they will lay out the plan to try and get a handle on the increase in prices to help and protect the consumer.
Yeah, whatever about the short-term nature of this that was being predicted, Peter, I think the tit-for-tat attacking of the fuel infrastructure and supply lines in the Middle East is perhaps going to prolong this longer than any of us would have wanted. What difference do you think the government can make in making it easier, I suppose, just to keep your house heated and your car on the road?
Well, I think it's very difficult. If you have a knee-jerk reaction, you'll be criticised for that. If you have a slow reaction, you're going to be criticised for that. So I think the government are in a no-win situation, because no matter what they do, everybody will not be happy and they'll just be criticised. And I think it is a very evolving situation. I think Israel very tactically attacked the gas fields in Iran, knowing damn well that the Iranians would react. And it's only appropriate that they would react. If someone hits you, you hit them back. And effectively, that's what's happened. And I think it's really evolving. And I suspect in the next week there will be big changes, because I suspect America will try and bring back the Israeli armed forces and hacking any of the oil resources. And ultimately, unless there is peace in the Gulf, we're not going to see a significant drop in our oil prices. But the problem for the government is whatever they do will not be enough. And once they enact legislation, trying to reverse it will be a nightmare, and they'll be criticised by everybody for trying to reverse the legislation. So they can't win. So knee-jerk is not the right answer. And no matter how quickly they do it, they'll be criticised for it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have been shocked to learn that 65%. So when we fill our car up with diesel and petrol, it's between 60 and 65% tax goes to government. So government have real levers here to intervene. They have a large surplus, as we know, available to them. So they do have the ability to intervene. In terms of the point that Peter raises, you'll know, Peter, that the government did intervene in terms of the Russian invasion of Ukraine when the prices went up at that time, and they then removed them incrementally in the months ahead. what we're proposing is a six-month period in terms of reducing the excise duties and indeed not increasing the carbon taxes and bringing in the energy credits. So there just needs to be interventions. And you know yourself, Peter, in a county like Donegal, we particularly rely on petrol, diesel, home heating oil, probably more than any other county. I'd certainly say outside of the west of Ireland, we're you know, the west of Ireland is very reliant. The rest of the country can probably cope okay with this.
Yeah, Peter, just a word on what is happening in the Middle East. It's remarkable that, you know, you can even see in the news agenda, this story is so big, it's local. It is hugely local, even though it's happening so far away. It's clear, isn't it clear, that Israel and certainly the United States underestimated Iran and its capabilities and how it might not be able to win a conventional war, in inverted commas, but it certainly has the wherewithal to win it in maybe, you know, ways that weren't considered by the Israelis and the US?
I suspect the Israelis knew damn well what they were getting involved in, and I think they lied and dragged the Americans into something that they weren't aware of. I mean, the stories about the fact that Iran are still stockpiling their more advanced weapons ready for use when the Israelis and the Americans run out of their anti-missile defences. So I think the Israelis knew damn sure what was going on. If their intelligence has been good enough to wipe out half the heads of government and the senior members of the government, damn sure they know exactly what resources the Iranians have. And their attack on the gas field just suggests they're trying to bring all the other Gulf states into this war and in basically wipe out Iran in as much as they can. I mean, the focus has been taken off Gaza and what's happening in Gaza, the appalling activities in the West Bank of the settlers there. I mean, this has just played into Israel's hand, and I suspect they know damn well what's going to go on, and they're doing their best to escalate rather than pull it back.
Where does Netanyahu get his power, Porik, from that he can seemingly drag the US into this absolute mess, especially as it goes against everything Donald Trump claimed to stand for? And whether people like him or not, he's not in Egypt, right, in this area, and strategically and reputationally, he has a plan. How is Israel so powerful?
Well, Joe Kent, who was Trump's counter-terrorism director, to use the terminology that they use, he resigned in recent days, and he labelled what it was, and it's the Israeli lobby, a hugely powerful lobby in the United States. And, you know, what was clear at a point in time was that the American public had turned against what was happening in Gaza, turned against the Israeli government. That was the point where finally Trump told Netanyahu to stop. But it was at the point where he had lost the public in the United States and that support. Isn't it horrific that it got to the point where 75% of the buildings in Gaza have been destroyed? Can you imagine in any town in Ireland or city, 75% of your buildings destroyed? Schools, hospitals, community buildings, businesses, your total infrastructure, homes destroyed. The level of children just slaughtered, wantonly slaughtered. And this is a war criminal, unprecedented in a long, long period of human history. And the United States are now backing him again in Iran. And as Peter says, this is about strategic interests of Israel, the selfish interests of Netanyahu to stay in power, because he will be pulled out of power in due course. It's just shocking, beyond shocking. Yeah. And the problem is for Europe and our own country and the world is if they just ignore what is happening with Trump and Netanyahu, they have no credibility to stand up against Putin and other essentially dictators that emerge. They've lost their credibility. And if that's the case, then we are in serious trouble internationally.
Finan, how do you see this ending?
Well, Craig, I wish I had the answer to that question. I really don't know. We all thought that there was light coming at the end of the tunnel in relation to Gaza, and that, that there was hope that there might be a sort of a stability and peace, and then all of a sudden the attacks in Iran come like a bolt out of the blue, really. I can't help but think, as a history teacher, back to, you know, the Second World War, and using the analogy of Churchill, and Churchill stayed in power while the war was going on, and as soon as the war was over and a general election was held, he was heavily defeated. And then if you look at Netanyahu, is it something similar in terms, as Parik has mentioned, of selfish interests and strategic interests? Is it that he kind of knew another war would prolong his stay in power? I really don't know. Quite simply, how it all ends is with international pressure being applied on all parties involved to simply stop the killing and stop the bombing. And
that's not really how the world's set up. Where would that international pressure come from? It's just not set up like that, unfortunately. It really isn't.
Yeah, and I mean, over a prolonged period of time, over 2 or 3 years, while the most recent conflict in Gaza was ongoing, I do honestly believe that the pressure that was applied internationally eventually did bring the
there was nothing left for them to bomb. I mean, they had obliterated.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if we don't have international...
At the same time, sitting beside Donald Trump with pictures of you know, hotels and swimming pools and him drinking drinks beside... I mean, that's how it ended. That doesn't feel like international pressure to me.
Well, we're certainly not going to end it by, you know, bombing the hell out of each other. That doesn't work, and history showed us that in any conflict. There's never any winners on any side whenever war is ongoing. So, I mean, apart from the international community and organisations like the UN, weak and all as they are, but without organisations like that applying the pressure that they can apply, I don't see how we're going to get a resolution to this. I mean, it's very difficult to try and, you know, strong arm, you know, a strong man, for want of a better term. And I mean, you would have to say that both Trump and Netanyahu would view themselves as strong men. And if you get into an arm wrestle with them, they're going to do everything in their power to beat you. And all the while, more civilians and more innocent people die and there's more destruction. So I certainly don't see that as a path to peace.
A caller says, we as a family face anxiety and frustration waiting on support. As a working family of two adults and two children, we are the new poor. We need immediate government support, not waiting for a plan on Tuesday, which takes more weeks to implement and will most likely only support the people on benefits. The one thing I will say is, in a crisis, don't turn on each other, because that really is very useful for the people that really you should be holding to account, whether it's the government or opposition or whatever. But when you start turning on your neighbour, you are doing half the work of the powers that be. A caller says, it's all greed. Between 60 and 65% of the prices I pay at the pump consists of government taxes, VAT, excise duty and carbon tax. Another says, we're heading for a recession if things don't change quick. And I'm not just talking about the Middle East. Never has so much been paid by so many for so few. Ukraine money on a war lost, children's hospital overrun, etc. When are people going to wake up to the wastage? How many junkets this week alone? Yeah, I would say holding Putin back, maybe might see that as an ongoing victory rather than a... But there is certainly, Peter, a risk of a recession. It's something we can't ignore. And it's interesting watching, you know, decisions being made this week in terms of interest rates and all that type of stuff. It does feel we're on a tipping point and a recession could well be around the corner. What say you?
I think it's... if this war doesn't end within the next few weeks, I think it's inevitable, because fuel prices will continue to rise, and regardless of how much intervention the government can actually afford to do, fuel prices will continue to rise and there may be fuel shortages. When you're old enough, you remember the early 70s when there was one of the wars again in the Gulf States, and we were pushing cars up and down. Well, I was helping my father push his car up and down to petrol stations, and you would be given 2 or 3 gallons. Factories were on 2 or 3 day working weeks. We were rolling power cuts. It was the coal strike as well that came after that, all of that sort of stuff. So, I mean, it's inevitable when you have a crisis that there will be consequences, and the duration of the crisis tells you how long the consequences are going to run to. But I would not be very hopeful that we'll be in a better place in a year's time than we are now.
Yeah.
But in regard to Israel, I think. They've been given a free pass since the genocide, which was the appalling effects of the German the World War. And, I mean, one of the classic examples of that is the German Chancellor will never criticise Israel and continue to supply them with ammunition and weapons. So they consider they have a free pass and they can do whatever they like.
That still doesn't make sense, though, because it still is a tiny little country in the middle of nowhere, a very important part of the world, don't get me wrong. A small population, though, with influences far beyond its size. Like, I mean, I get exactly where you're coming from. Like, is it some sort of a guilt hangover from World War II? But I don't. It can't be that, because most people don't remember that. That sounds so naive. Don't get me wrong, but there must be something else to it.
No, the American Jewish lobby remembered very well. And why do you think Israel has all the weapons they have? I mean, their anti-missile defences are probably greater than the combined anti-missile defences of the rest of the world. And it's all been supplied by America. And if they're a population of probably only 1.5 times our population, their military is enormous, the technology they have is enormous. It's been funded by America. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, the only way this war will stop is if America stops supplying them with weapons and missiles and bombs and spare parts of their aircraft. Mm-hmm. The Americans could shut them down in a day if they really wanted
to. Yes, but I mean, the public sentiment, the anti-Jewish sentiment, is, this is a regime, right? But the anti-Jewish sentiment is growing all across the world. Most of Donald Trump's, bar Ben Shapiro, most of Donald Trump's MAGA crew that were trumpeting him throughout the course of his election now are effectively anti-Israel. And yet, you know, normally that would change policy, Podrick. But it is not. Do you get where I'm coming from? So it's not just the people of America and people around the world, and I'm not, who are anti the Israeli regime, but even Trump's greatest supporters, and yet still, there's this undying support and loyalty to Netanyahu.
Yeah, and what you have in the United States is not just the I would call it the pro-Israel lobby, because it isn't just Jewish, it's fundamentalist Christian, so it is very, very influential politically. They remove congressmen or senators if they go against them. They put congressmen or senators in. They have huge financial resources. And then in Europe, they target, I mean, we've seen what happened with Jeremy Corbyn in Britain, they target political leaders. So this is and then there's online wars, social media wars. This has been a war now for a long time, but it really reached its apex, its top level with what happened in Gaza. And I think when we look back in 40, 50 years' time, I hope we're in a better world. People will look back and say, how on earth did they get away with what they did for so long? Yeah. But it is the United States, Peter's right. Yes, it's the United States political backing.
I've said this before. We think in this day and age that we're so clever that we would never, you know, do anything to destroy the world. But history has shown us it comes in cycles. From the very beginning of time, there's a period of peace and then there's a period of extreme war. Why now would it be any different? It just seems to be the direction we're heading into. And as a history teacher, you know the cycle. And I don't want to be a doom monger, don't get me wrong. But, you know, man has not advanced that much. We have AI and all that crap. But fundamentally, we're in potentially in the cycle of war again.
Yeah, and I mean, I couldn't help but think, Greg, when you were talking about Israel as a state and as a country and the way you were describing it, you know, in my head, that could very easily fit a description of Ireland. What's massively different about the two countries is how we use our influence throughout the world. As we've seen with Israel and their powerful and influential friends in America and in the West, they use it, you know, to start war. Whereas in Ireland and in the week that we're in now, you know, it's more present than ever. We use it to make our presence felt on the international stage. I mean, as a country, a very small country, like, you know, really only a dot, a speck on a map, look at the impact that we have in America again, indeed in the EU.
I don't think it's there anymore, with respect, Finan. I don't think we have that influence. I don't think we've got any, or we might have one elected rep in both the upper and lower houses who claims Irish heritage. You know, we're not held out as any special case in the undocumented conversation anymore. I don't believe we have that same influence over there as we once had. Maybe we do, I don't know.
I honestly disagree. I think that we're in as strong a place as ever we were, and indeed maybe stronger because, you know, a short decade ago we had the Brexit saga, and obviously Ireland could have been massively negatively impacted as a result of that. And I think only for our standing in Europe, and indeed with our American allies and colleagues, we would have come out of that particular saga a whole lot worse than we did. So I honestly think our standing is as good across the world as it ever has been.
All right, that's good to hear. Right, you heard there from Councillor Fionnán Bradley, who's last Cathaoirleach Luck of Inishowen Municipal District. We also have with us in our mini studio here Deputy Padraig McLaughlin, and joining us remotely Dr. Peter O'Rourke. And we'll tell you much more about where we are and why we're here later. But just to remind you, today, this evening, in fact, is the grand opening of the Plaza Youth Club and Cafe, which is on the main street here in Buncrana. The official opening is at 7 p.m. This evening. All are welcome. There's beautiful seating areas, play areas, pool areas and what have you as well. And coming up at noon today, between 12 noon and 2 p.m., in fact, they are opening the CAF, the Plaza Piano Cafe, and there's going to be a whole host of food. Did you say that's for free? Yeah, it is for free. Okay. I don't want to end up with the bill by saying that incorrectly by accident. Well, the time now is 9:31. Right, we are, of course, in beautiful Inishowen on Buncrana's main street, which is beautiful. It's buzzing, and I love being here. And it seems that every shop is busy and it's well put out. And there's so much on offer here. You haven't been here in a while. I certainly suggest you do. Right, so the current situation at Buncrana Community Hospital is, of course, causing significant local frustration. Construction on a long-promised extension and refurbishment was originally slated to begin in June 25. The date's been pushed back multiple times, and the facility is currently operating in a significantly reduced capacity. And beds were closed in the middle of last year, I think, wasn't it? With the idea being that construction would start really, really soon. So there's a loss of 20 to 30 beds. There's been public protests here. It's kind of slipped off the agenda a bit, which doesn't mean it has in any way lost its importance. Where are we at, Padraig McLaughlin, as far as we know?
Well, first thing, it was great to see such a great turnout last Saturday at the protest here in the town. And you can see how important we would call it our nursing unit, as community hospitals, the terminology the HCC uses, to our community. We were the people that fought for it back in the day, fundraised for it, kept it going throughout the year. So there's a deep, deep emotional attachment to this. Where we're at is that we've requested a meeting with the head of the HSC and his team, Dermot Monaghan. I understand he might be away at the moment, but we need to have that meeting as soon as possible. We need to get answers as to, you know, like, we were given a firm commitment, all of us as public representatives, that early 2026, it was in writing to all of us that that this would commence work, you know, and then it said 12 to 18 months. So obviously we would have been pushing to try and get it closer to 12 months. So that's where it sat. So we would have been expecting it to open in early 2027. What happened in my case was a member of our community who had some information around the tender and was particularly interested because her family are affected by it, had said to me, I think this has been delayed. And I said, but we have it in writing, but I'll check, I'll email them. And it took weeks, and I started to get concerned. You know, we didn't get a fast response. It went on for maybe 3 or 4 weeks, and eventually got it in writing that this carry-on with HICWA and messing around with the plans, changing them around, had delayed it yet again. So we've sent a clear message for Buncrana, you know, on a collective basis from our community, that we want this sorted urgently. We want these plans locked down, gone to tender and commence, and then see the time frame. They've now given us a time frame of 18 months. They've changed it. It was 12 to 18 months, now it's 18 months. We'd be arguing, go to tender as soon as possible and then get it built as soon as possible, because they have people out of that nursing unit now for a year. They've been relocated to Nazareth House and Fawn, to Carndonna. It's just unacceptable.
Great facilities, but just too far away.
Yeah.
But why have we got to the root causes to what are the delays? Is it HICWA interfering? Is it bad management? Is it bad project management? You know, like, I'm sick and tired of no one knowing exactly why these things happen.
Well, I read out the response that I got on your show last week, and it was just absolute bureaucratic jargon. But what I understand is the case is that this is a HICWA-driven project. They said, you know, many years ago, the building is not fit for purpose by the standards. And that was a chance to add more beds. That was a missed opportunity. We moved on to the point now. But apparently, still, as we speak, they're still back and forth with HICWA around the design. Like, this is incompetence. There's no other way to call it. It's incompetence, a lack of focus, a lack of respect for the community here in Bunkrana, because people have been out of those beds for a year. We seen some of the testimonies, Fionnuala, at the protest last Saturday, and, you know, Elizabeth Van Nelson in particular, I thought, was really moving, has got a huge response in the community since, because it was videoed and put online, so anybody who couldn't make the protest can see. So the people of Bunkrana are not going to stand for this. This is going to have to be sorted, you know.
Fionnuala?
Yeah, and look, I have to say that all politicians from all political parties, none are pushing together for this. I mean, what's mind-boggling to me is that it took as long as it did for this issue to boil over locally here in the Bunkrana area, because if you go back to 2019, that's when planning permission was initially granted for the project. Absolutely nothing happened in the five-year period after planning was granted. Now, I know we have to accept COVID happened in that time period. We come to 2024, then the planning had to be reapplied for, and it was actually refused, so that caused delays. Eventually, the planning was re-granted in late 2024, and absolutely nothing has happened since. And I can fully understand that the local community feel that it's a downgrading of the hospital, that it's an effort and an attempt to wind the facility down. It certainly isn't that, and we are not going to allow it to be that. As I said on Saturday at the protest, it's not a funding issue. It's not that we're asking the minister or any official in the HSE to award funding to the project. The 1.4 million is there in plain black and white. It was in the HSE capital plan announced a little over 3 weeks ago.
So what's the problem then?
It seems to be complete inefficiency in the organisation that is the HSE, and just a complete mismanagement of the project. And I'm really not clear exactly what stage the project is at, because as Parik says, last May they told us that work was starting in June and they moved the patients out. Absolutely nothing happened.
Then is there a contractor selected?
Well, as far as I know, there isn't.
So how can you even give us, how could you gazump the process by suggesting a start date if there's no contractor?
And this is exactly my point. And the HSE have been disingenuous with the local elected reps, and they haven't been given us a full, frank and honest picture of exactly where the situation is at. In September of 25, then they said there were issues with the kitchen and they'd increase the scope of the works. The 7th of November, the letter came out saying that works will commence in quarter 1/26. That was the statement they used. And as I said on Saturday, we're nearly in quarter two, and now they're telling us we're at stage one of pre-tender approval.
But we're in this awful situation where we're all trying to expedite the process of building a facility that no longer meets the needs of the community. No, so we're going to be, you know, turning up for sod turnings and ribbon cutting, right? But we're going to see another situation like the Little Angel School in Letterkenny. It's not really of a design anymore to meet the needs of the community. So do we need to actually bite the bullet and say, right, if this is going to take a year or two longer, we need a bigger, better facility to service the people and the area of South Inishowen? Is that a tough decision that you as elected reps need to maybe make? Because, I mean, that's the right thing to do. It might not be the popular thing to do, because how do you articulate that you potentially could be delaying the project? But it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, well, the only issue I have with that, Greg, is that as far as I'm aware, it's HICWA that have, a stay on any more patients been accepted into the facility. So if
but
we
presumably
are...
presumably that's based on the design of the building, right? So maybe we need to look at design of the building. If it's bigger with more staff, HICWA can't have any problem with more people living there, surely.
No, but there are issues around, spacing within rooms and the size of rooms and one-bed wards.
That's what I'm saying.
And
so let's make a bigger, better facility that will meet the needs of South Inishowen.
Yeah, because we need 60 already beds in Bunkrana here for our elderly population at the very least.
So let's stop campaigning for a facility half that size and say, right, maybe there's a window of opportunity here for us to bite the bullet, bring the community along and say, right, we are probably going to have to go back for 2.8 million or 3.7 million or whatever it is and build a facility that helps the community and helps LUH.
Yeah, we can take a staggered approach to the issue as well, because the problem I have, Greg, and I'm sure Parik and all the elected reps are the same, we have families right now, and Parik mentioned Elizabeth Ann Nelson, who have family members who need respite and who need care in the facility right now. Best case scenario, we'll have patients on the facility in 2 years' time, this time 2 years roughly. And that's the best case scenario. If things do go to plan from what the HSE are saying from this point on, and you wouldn't have much faith in them because they haven't kept any of their deadlines at this point. So, I mean, if we're going down the road of going back to the very start of the process and going back to square one, just to further increase capacity.
I think there's somewhere in between those two scenarios you talk of. I think there's somewhere in between where we're at and square one. And you know, and I think there's enough money sloshing around and enough experience for people to work out what that is. How can we get the proper facility, but not sort of, because, you know, this sounds very much like how people were supposed to accept the crappy first redress deal, because we were told, if you don't take this now, you know, this is going to have to go back, and it's going to have to go through legislation, and it's going to take ages. This is the best we can do right now. And people says, okay, we'll do that. I don't want the public to be sold that this time again, that, you know, you have to accept a 20 to 30 bed facility, because if we go back to square one, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, my honest opinion is, if we do go back to square one, like you're saying, you're looking at a 4 or 5 year time frame before the facility will open. And I really don't think that is acceptable.
I really just find it hard to believe in this day and age, with the lessons we've learned, that we should expect a 50%, half a loaf of bread, right, rather than a full loaf, because you'll end up with no loaf at all. I just don't buy that, sorry.
And I do want to be perfectly, perfectly clear with everybody locally that there were 41 beds on the facility before the HSE started the process back last May. When the works are finished, there are only going to be 30. I really do want that message to get out there very clearly.
I want to bring Peter in, because I'm very interested in his... But I think you wanted to come back in there, Padraig, just whilst we're on this flow of what we're actually going to end up with.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked the question, Greg. I got a response to a parliamentary question to the Minister for Health recently, and I wanted to know from 2007 to now, so that's almost 20 years, how many beds do we have in our nursing units, community hospitals back then? How many beds do we have now? And we've lost one in four across Donegal. And me and you talked about this last week, and one of the issues, I think, is they were looking to privatise. So these community, which I think is the best form of care from the community, supported by the community, over towards the private. So there was an opportunity a number of years back, and at that time the government had a freeze on extra beds. That's why we missed the opportunity. But now, with all this time that's passed and this... flapping around this incompetence, in my opinion, there is an opportunity to have the conversation now. You know, whether you do it where you would build what's there, but build additional capacity. For example, there's a medical centre behind the nursing unit that belongs to the HSE. So is there capacity to stretch out the back?
Well, let's do stage one, stage two then. But, you know, put those wheels in motion.
Yeah, I think this is an opportunity to have that conversation again. Yeah. And I would be urging all public reps locally to make that case. Let's get our 30 beds done as soon as possible, but push on maybe for 60.
Mr. Peter O'Rourke.
Welcome to the world I've lived in for many, many
indeed,
years.
Indeed, Peter, indeed.
The HSE tend to apply the Peter principle, nothing to do with me, which is people are promoted to the level of their incompetence. And unfortunately, that is very evident in the HSE. I mean, quite often the next person in line gets the job rather than having the skill set, and that's part of the reason things never happen the way they should. So people go into jobs, don't know what the hell the job involves, learn on the job, and that takes 6 months or a year before they actually know what they're meant to be doing. The HSE have very little interest and sail in whatever current existence they have no interest in Donegal, because it's all focused on Galway. So nobody is fighting for us apart from our local politicians, to be quite honest, and it's an uphill battle. I mean, the classic example, as well as if you change plans, is you don't get anything, because the Children's Hospital, which will hopefully be eventually finished in the next year, could have been built somewhere out in the Red Cow or somewhere on the M50 20 years ago, if it wasn't for all the changes in planning. So if you change anything from what is initially agreed, you can add a year or two onto it, and it may last even longer, because all you need is a downturn in the economy next year and it'll be put on the back burner. So whatever you have promised, grab it with both hands, because it may not exist in a year or 18 months time. But basically, the level of incompetence, as the other two speakers have said, in the HSE is enormous. It is top-heavy, and their decision-making processes are very poor. I mean, for instance, most of the decisions for, say, the likes of Letterkenny Hospital are made in Galway without people actually even visiting to look around the hospital.
But isn't it, Peter, is it not a terrible indictment of the situation where someone with your experience says effectively the system is so, so broke that you take what you can get because you might not get anything at all? You know, I mean, that's effectively waving the white flag.
Well, I waved whatever flag I could for many years, right. And apart from a bit of notoriety, didn't get anywhere.
I think you did. I think you're doing yourself a disservice there. I think really the fantastic movement from consultants and GPs and the medical community in Donegal, I think without you being as outspoken as you were at the time in the interests of public safety, I don't think we'd be where we're at today. So I think you're doing yourself a great disservice there, if you don't mind me saying so.
I agree 100%, Greg, and I know Peter won't say it, so I'm going to say it. There was a number of consultants who spoke out over the years, in fairness to Michael Sugrue and yourself, and you have Anya Keating now, Paul O'Connor, backed by a whole team of consultants. But you guys spoke up for our community, and you did it again and again, Peter, and we're so grateful to you for doing it. Mm. You were then backed by GPs across Donegal, and finally we've made progress. Like, the surgical hub was just a moment where we turned the conversation. We stood up to the people who were Galway-centric in the HSE, who were going to shaft us again, frankly, and we got the extra cancer beds, and we united together in Donegal. But it was people like yourself, with the authority that you have, who know what they're talking about, to come on the radio and have that courage to speak out. So I'm really grateful to you for everything you've done for our people over the years, and people need to know that there was a number of you that stood up for us, and only for you we wouldn't be where we are, making progress at last today.
Well, that's what I was saying, but I think Parg tried to steal my thunder there. No, I'm only joking. No, you're so right. Okay. We'll take a break, and we'll be back with more from Peter O'Rourke and Fionnán and Padraig after I find out what button I press. It's this one, isn't it? You're very welcome back to beautiful, sunny Buncrana. The weather forecast is ancient. That's the wrong weather forecast. Right, I'll get your weather forecast shortly. Anyway, today's going to be nice. I can tell you that for nothing. And this evening is going to be nice because we are here on Main Street Buncrana as it prepares to welcome a major new community facility as a state-of-the-art youth club nears completion on the ground floor of the Plaza Community Building on the town's Main Street. After 8 months of focused construction and 6 years of painstaking restoration work on the Plaza Building itself, following the devastating fire that destroyed it, the project is now entering its final phase. And I have had a walk through here, and it really is a lovely facility. It's done out really, really nice, and it's got so much for people. It's so important too, isn't it, that we have facilities, Fionnán? Do you know what I mean? We sometimes idle minds do the, I'm not going to say the devil's work, that's unfair, but the more kind of facilities we have for young people, especially that aren't booze-centric, you know, we tend to do an awful lot with booze involved. I dabble in that area myself, don't get me wrong, but I mean, it's nice for the young ones to have facilities like this.
It is, and I fit into the first category where I don't dabble at any type of booze. I'm a teetotaler myself.
Well done, all the time.
Yeah, listen, that's really no big deal.
No. Okay. I took about 5 seconds here, didn't I, Carly?
Next question.
No, I'm going to have to ask Peter. Peter, are you a teetotaler?
I plead the fifth.
Okay, good stuff. Right. No, but go ahead, back to the facilities.
No, so, I mean, I was that teenager and young person and whatever that, you know, was at a bit of a loose end in terms of having somewhere to go and something to do at weekends and evenings and in the summer. I really would encourage absolutely every person, but especially all young people, to come to the Plaza. If you can't make it today, come in as soon as you can. Just see the facilities. Like, there's pool tables, there's gaming rooms, there's a cinema room.
There's a golf simulator. Looks cool.
Like, I don't think there's another town in Ireland that has a youth centre, a drop-in centre like this, quite honestly. Certainly not one that's as modern and as well-equipped with all the latest technology. There really is something for everybody.
And there's amazing artwork here too, which we'll talk about a little later on. Padraig, you wanted to say something there?
Yeah, well, the first thing is we're so proud of the team here in the Plaza. I mean, it was absolutely devastating, the fire of 2019.
I remember that like it was yesterday.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Like, it was absolutely, and, you know, people will forgive me, Ursula McDade, or we would know her as Ursula the Hen. She'll strangle me now. She is an incredible woman, backed by Christopher's down there, Flanagan's and George McLaughlin. There's a whole layer of people here in the town that have always supported this. It's not for profit, and it's, you know, it really is. I mean, it's just incredible what they've done. And they're now looking at towards the next phase, which is the famous ballroom, getting that back to its glory. But this is a really good news story, what's happening here. And everybody in this project deserves huge credit for it.
Yeah. OK, listen, Peter, I'm not sure how au fait you are with the facilities here, so I won't put you under pressure. But I do want to thank you very much for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you on. You know that. And thank you very much for your time and your fascinating insights. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, look after yourself. Thank you very much indeed. That's Mr. Peter O'Rourke. And just to let you know that there is free food available here for you to come in and have a look at the facilities, as well as get something lovely to eat between 12 noon and 2 p.m. Where's the best place? I mean, everyone knows it, don't you? I mean, I was going to say, normally you say something is beside a landmark, but this is the blooming landmark, isn't it? So, all right. Listen, Patrick, thank you so much having us in your town. Same with you, Finan. It's been wonderful, and we appreciate you having us and coming in and seeing us. Right, we have an hour to come on the show where we'll be able to focus so much more on what it takes really to get something like this from inception to reality, and the ambitious plans ahead. So stay tuned for all of that. We'll be back after we take a break for the news. Okay, you're very welcome back to Buncrana. We are broadcasting live today from a new state-of-the-art youth club set to open this evening at 7 p.m. It is the Plaza Youth Club and Cafe, and it's years of ideas, years of planning, and years of work has come to this day. The official opening is tonight at 7 p.m. Everybody is welcome, and we're so pleased to be here as part of this really special day. And we'll be speaking to some of the people behind this wonderful development very, very shortly. Just to remind you, by the way, if you are in the area, some delicious food is available for you for free from 12 noon to 2 p.m. this afternoon. There'll also be some entertainment. Sharon Graham is the resident piano player and joins us here, or we join you, really, I suppose. How are you keeping?
Very well, and good morning to you.
Tell us about this beautiful piano you have.
Well, it's a Perspex Steinhoven, and it's completely transparent. And when I was playing it the other day, I was quite amazed to see. I didn't realise how many notes I played, but I now can watch myself, actually. You know, I see all the little hammers
so
working inside.
So someone as talented as you, it was sort of a bit of an eye-opener for you to see what goes on behind the mahogany.
Exactly, exactly, indeed. Oh, brilliant, it's so fascinating, especially for the young people coming in as well. They'll be so drawn to it.
I think it's a lovely touch, actually, having something that feels traditional but sounds and looks modern, right?
Yes.
In this type of environment. What is there a thought process behind that?
I wasn't actually involved in the purchase of the piano, but I'm not surprised that Christopher Flanagan chose this, because it's edgy and it creates completely the right vibe for this wonderful community project.
Brilliant. And when will you be in playing?
I'm not quite sure. I haven't got my schedule yet,
okay.
But at the moment I'm delighted, and really delighted, to be part of this initiative. I think
fantastic.
It's great.
Fantastic. Yeah, I love it. Give us a few bars of something there, if you don't mind. This is Sharon Graham, just to give us a sense. Okay, Okay, that is Sharon Graham there, and I think I heard Say a Little Prayer there, Aretha Franklin, wasn't it? That was it, wasn't it?
That absolutely is one of my favourites.
Yeah, and it sounds like you've got eight hands.
It's a modest talent.
Well done. Okay, right, let's go to America, because we're joined by Mr. Oisin Kelly. Good morning, Oisin.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
What time is it there?
The time's 12 minutes past 6 in the morning.
Oh, right. Well, I know you're an early riser, but we still appreciate it nonetheless. Right, okay. Tell us...
I've been up for a few hours, Greg. The time clock hasn't just sunk properly yet, so okay. It's not...
You might as not bother try at this point. Right, okay. So what's coming up from you guys over there over the next couple of days? Well, firstly, tell us why you went over in the first place, because it's quite an interesting story.
The Donegal Diaspora Initiative, Greg, has been set up by a number of Donegal men, not just here in Philadelphia, but there's other parts of it as well that stretches as far as Dubai, Donegal communities. So they want to just basically to strengthen the Donegal Diaspora and strengthen the network that's there. And this has been in the making for a number of years. The likes of John McDade from Letterkenny, Kieran Porter, originally from Rafoe, and other Letterkenny man, Connor Gibbons, who's out in Dubai, was part of this from the start as well. So they wanted to host an event that included sports, business, and a bit of culture, and to bring all these Donegal communities together. And as I said, it's been in the works for the last number of years, and here we are now this weekend. And Highland was honoured to be asked to come over and cover this event, and we've had a really, really enjoyable time. And it's fantastic when you come to this side of the world, Greg, and you meet so many people from elsewhere around the world who have come so far just to be part of this event and continue to strengthen those roots and those connections that have been established down through the years and help them grow, and Highland's part of it. And we've got a very busy schedule here, because we have the Donegal Philadelphia Business Forum, which is happening today. I have to be up there for 7 a.m. to get the setup done for the broadcast. And we've got around about 200 businesses or so coming to that event. The room's going to have several hundred people in it, and we're going to hear from some businessmen who have been hugely, and women that is, who have been hugely successful in their careers, and they have a Donegal connection. The likes of Gary Martin of the Donegal County Council is over here. We met Donald Mandy Kelly, who is the vice chair of the county council as well. We met him yesterday at the Rocky Steps. So we did. So we have politicians, we have business people. We have lots of sporting people here. There's going to be a big football tournament tomorrow, Saturday, up at the Glenmill Schools, where teams from London, Glasgow, where else have they come? Our own Donegal Masters are here. Philadelphia teams, New York, Boston. There has been a few, I'm led to believe, from Dubai, who have actually got out, Greg, from the Middle East and have come here. Now, they're not going to have a team, because there was about 40 of them were due to come, but the bulk of them couldn't make it. So that's sort of a sense of what's
happening. It's one of those funny situations where...
But today now is going to be... It's a very, very important day for them, because this is the first event, and obviously having so many business people in the one room who are all aiming and striving for the same goal of continuing to build the Donegal connection, the business connection, the sporting connection, and the cultural connection with our county, Greg.
Yeah, but whilst you're on the other side, well, it's not the other side of the world, but it's certainly quite some distance away, it's going to feel very much like Donegal, which often happens when I head away somewhere for the radio station, and I'm sure it's the same with you. It's like a little bit of home, even when you're away, which is...
even when you're... And that's for the people who are living here, the McDean family is obviously here originally from Letterkenny. They're looking after us very, very well. It's like being back in Letterkenny and in the county again. And then when you meet so many people who are working here and so many people who have made the trip over, Greg, there is a bit of a home from home in it. When people hear the Donegal accent, like we were in the city yesterday, and they clicked on the Irish accent and they clicked what part of the county we're from. And when you say you're from Donegal, oh yeah, there's lots of Donegal people here, and so no, it's
how
very,
much
it's
is
very,
a pint?
Very nice and humbling to meet so many people away from home.
How much is a pint?
Sorry?
How much is a pint of beer?
What's a pint of beer?
There you go. See, company credit card, Caroline.
Is it?
I told you, company credit card. He doesn't know how much a pint of beer is.
Greg, we have no time. We have no time to be partaking in anything, because, as I said to you at the start,
I know
I've been up since about 4 o'clock this morning, because the time clock has so. See, come half 8, 9 o'clock, you're ready for the bed. And you have to remember as well, we're working, Greg, and we're doing a lot of preparation.
Excuse me, thou protest too much. It was a little joke. Right, so you're on air here, Irish time, this evening, just after the 7 o'clock news, and then tomorrow just after 4.
So, like the business forum, Greg, this evening, the likes of the speakers who's going to be here, I'll just give you a sort of a very, very quick rundown as to actually what is taking place. There's going to be various panel discussions on various topics. Now, our own CEO, Sean Quinn, is actually a mediator for one of those talks, which is Global Connections, Local Impact. Gary Martin is going to head up an overview on the Donegal economic development. Former Minister Joe McHugh is here. He's going to be involved in the section which is highlighting sort of political, business and cross-border experience. Aidan Blake will be talking AI and the future of the business landscape under that AI umbrella by the time 2030 comes around. Katrina Jennings, we all know her, Letterkenny lady, very, very successful on the business front as well. She's 20 years experience in aviation and the financial service, Greg, and she is, of course, a world record holder and an Olympian as well. So she is here to talk. And Miss Anne Colley, who originally came from Glencolumbkill, and she's been here since 1962, is going to be the recipient of a business award, and Mayor Kieran Brogan will be here to present that award. So that's just a small taste of what's going to be happening. It starts at 11 o'clock fully time, and it's going to wrap up around 4, and we're going to broadcast the last hour of that event, Greg, from 3 to 4. We're going to speak to a number of those people. We're going to get a feel of what life is like over here from a business point of view with Donegal people, and we're going to go through some of the highlights of what actually took place that day. So we're really, really excited, and we're really looking forward to our broadcast, which is going to be 7 o'clock Irish time, 3 o'clock fully time, really, to kick off this fantastic weekend with the Donegal Diaspora.
Right, you need to get your glad rags on and get off to the venue. Thank you so much, though, for joining us and giving us a sense of what we can look forward to, Oisín. Look after yourself.
Okay, thanks, Greg.
Bye. We'll be back with more from the wonderful Plaza Youth Club and Cafe, which is opening formally this evening at 7 p.m. We'll be back with more from here after we take this break. Okay, welcome back to a very special program. We are broadcasting live here from the grand opening. Well, it's the day of the grand opening of the the Plaza Youth Club and Cafe, by the way. Call in is the invitation. It's open to everybody to call in. There's free food and refreshments here from 12, by the way. So that's another excuse for you to call in. But the official opening is tonight at 7 p.m. And, you know, over the course of the years on this program, we often talk about facilities for young people in terms of, you know, what to do where it's not a drink-based environment. You know, you can have a bit of fun, but that always doesn't have to be drink or anything else there for that matter. And this is exactly what this is all about. It's a wonderful, wonderful facility. Right, now, let me see. I wonder, can I go to that? I just can't go to that audio at the moment, Caroline, so we might move on and come back to that if that's okay. So just to remind you, coming up here at 12 o'clock in this wonderful facility, the Plaza Piano Cafe, there is free food. And we heard from Sharon a little earlier on, the piano is gorgeous, by the way. And if you want to see the inner workings of a piano, it's a great opportunity to do so. But they've got a simple but extensive menu, and everything is fairly priced, though today it's free. Chicken fillet, chicken bites, sausage roll, curry chips, €3. I'll have that twice. Chicken wings, just €4. Chips, €2.50 in and of themselves. So that's a sense of what's on the offering here. So if a couple of teenagers want to head out for a game of pool and a bite to eat, it's not going to set them back an absolute fortune. And this is not about profit or a business, and we'll tell you more about the ethos of it a little bit later on. This is a community facility, and that is the ethos, and that's what it's all about. And it's part of wider plans for this fantastic building. And we heard Padraig McLaughlin referencing that fire. I remember that fire. I was at home that night, and we got news that something was going on in the main street, and started to sort of share that information. And it was an amazing response by the emergency services to contain it. And look, it's a little bit like the Doe Famine Village. Here we are a number of years later, and new life and new ideas have been bred into this wonderful facility. By the way, thanks for all your texts, calls and comments coming in. We'll get to more of them as this morning wears on, by the way. It is business as usual, even though we are outside the studio. Right, so let's get more of a sense of what this building is all about. And we are joined by Christopher Flanagan, who's the founder of the Plaza Community Building as it is today. So take us back. Christopher, by the way, thank you very much for having us up. It really is wonderful what you've all achieved here.
Yeah.
Where did the idea come from?
Well, first of all, it's great to have Highland Radio here to bring the exposure that we need. There's a lot of bad news out there these days, and this is probably the first good news story in a long time. The Plaza before the fire 7 years ago was a building that had a youth club in it, and it had a small events hall upstairs, and then it had a very large ballroom to the rear. And it enjoyed many, many events for Buncrana. It became a focal point for the heart of Buncrana. We had Christy Murray play here on one occasion, and we had loads of different acts here, you know. So Letterkenny has its Green and Theatre, Derry has its Millennium Forum, and Buncrana had the Plaza. Now the Plaza obviously stretched back much further than the Millennium Forum or the Green and Theatre. I think it was established in 1958, so it was one of the first in the Northwest, or at least in the North, I would say. There's old photos here on the wall, which I can show you after this, which are quite nostalgic. And there's not a family in Donegal and Derry as well that hasn't got some memory of the old Plaza back in the early days. So there's a lot of memories stored up in this building. So the fire in the drapery store next door obviously took the Plaza with it. But thankfully we had insurance in the building, but with the cost of building and stuff, the insurance didn't stretch to restore the full building. So we were able to get the small events hall up off the ground, courtesy of Ursula here beside me. A lot of work went into that, blood, sweat and tears, literally. A lot of private investment went into it as well. And we got it off the ground, and it's been a big success ever since. The town are delighted that that's up and running. And then the next stage then was the youth club. So there was no funding anywhere to be got for a youth club, so I stepped in and decided to do it myself. And I surveyed the schools, both schools, Scullwara and the Tech, and basically surveyed 1,000 kids and asked them what would they want in a youth club. And I got a lot of stuff back, as you can imagine. One child wanted a water world.
The wonders of the youth.
Yeah, exactly. Another one wanted horses, which again wasn't very possible. So anyway, we gathered up all the data and we just looked at what was feasible, what could we do, you know. And one of the big things was pool tables. So we've that in. Another one was they wanted a place to play the PlayStation, and we've done that now. So we've got 5 PlayStations there. So 10 kids can play the PlayStation at the same time. They can play FIFA tournaments or whatever they wish to do. And then what we noticed is that there's a new trend coming through, which has probably been around for a while. I'm just too old to know it, is gamer PCs. It's for more sophisticated gaming, but the reason the kids like that is because they can stray away from games that are limited to the PlayStation, and they have an infinite amount of games on gamer PCs. So we've brought in 4 of those for the kids to play.
So you haven't done anything there in half measures. You know, I know the cost of these things,
yeah.
And that's a significant investment.
Yeah, well, I mean, I grew up in Buncrana. I'm nearly 50 years of age, and we always had a place to go if it wasn't Colin McDonald's Arcade or Kerry's Amusements. We always had somewhere to go and play pool. Henderson's had snooker tables. I realized when my daughter came to me in March of last year, there's nothing for kids to do in Buncrana unless you're into Gaelic or football or whatever, you know. So there is a darts club that has started up in Buncrana, thankfully, so there's some things there. So in terms of kids, I noticed a worrying trend with kids, and I speak about my own kids when I say this as well, that a lot of kids are retreating to their bedrooms on their PlayStations and on their computers, and they're living in a virtual world. And I find that very, very unhealthy. It's very bad for a child's mental health. They become incapable of functioning in society and communicating and socializing. And I realized if I could build this and give them a space where they can come out and still do those activities, but do it amongst their peers, that it would create a much healthier environment for children to grow up in. And that was the basic idea behind it. Now, my daughter at the time when she told me about this was 14. Now she's 15. And she's too old to come to the club, she says. So well, I kind of lost my daughter on it.
I think she'll end up being drawn here.
Yeah, if we can get her with it, peer pressure,
when
maybe.
When its reputation builds, this will be an organic growth too, to some extent.
Hopefully
when
so, yeah.
Kids come, they see what it is and how inclusive it is, and then the mates follow. Brian Scampton is an Inish own artist, and Brian, congratulations on the work you've done here. Extensive, impressive, and in keeping, I think, with the ethos.
Thank you very much. Appreciate
Talk to
it.
Me about the project and the scale of the project compared to what you're used to.
Yeah, well, I'm used to working on a much smaller scale, and usually at the easel working on small scale canvas paintings of seascapes. This is a large mural painting project. Chris invited me to come and adorn the walls here with some kind of artwork that would take away the very sort of sterile clinical atmosphere of the white walls. As you can see, it's a very long passageway. And so we just knocked about a few ideas and come up with representations of the local physical landscape, along with some of the landmarks, historical heritage, architecture, and that.
But there's a balance to be struck there too, because of the environment you're in, right? Mm. It is a youth club, and I think you've struck that balance really well, whereby it does talk to the heritage and the surroundings, right? But it's not preachy, and it's consumable by people of all generations, right?
Yes.
So there's no point you putting in the Sistine Chapel ceiling in here either,
no.
To some extent. Now, you're not far off it, don't get me wrong, but was that a conscious plan that you would reflect what you wanted to reflect, but that it also fitted its surroundings?
Yeah, to try and get the people who come in here, you know, a sense of interest and pride in their physical environment, because it's a lovely location. You know, that left-hand wall there is basically the lock itself, Loch's Willy, beginning with the marina, and then the Inch Island and the regatta theme, going right down through the port, is it Stergill or
Portaw.
And then at the very end you have Dunree Fort above the bay. So that's really the lock itself, you know, there's just a physical, it's a beautiful skyline, you know, and the hills and so on. And then the other side is more the architectural heritage, you know, with the bridges and the corn mill, Swan's corn mills at the bottom there, and the Mill River with the two bridges, and then the the next is the between the keep and the Swan Park, the Castle Bridge along there. So that's...
You must be very happy, Christopher, with how it turned out.
Yeah, I picked up Brian's flyer down at one of the local coffee shops, and Brian is a landscape architect, or a landscape artist, so, or more seascape actually, and coastal seascapes. And I called up to Brian's studio up in Mobile, and his artwork was very impressive, and I thought if we could get him done, we weren't sure what to do on the walls. That we were, see, the whole concept of the youth club, aside from activities for children, was to try and inspire children. To inspire them to become the next generation of entrepreneurs. And the idea behind that would be to try and put inspirational figureheads all the way down the walls, but we realized that wouldn't work, and we figured the best thing to do was to take what was most beautiful about any show and try and portray it on the walls. It would look better than a hospital corridor, which is effectively what it looked like before Brian started.
Okay, well, it doesn't look like that now. Ursula McDade, you're the manager of the Plaza Community Building.
That's right, Craig, yes.
It's a three-part building, isn't it? And Christopher referenced this a little earlier on. We are sitting in the Piano Cafe.
That's correct,
right,
yes.
Right, okay. And then, of course, the youth club runs behind it. Buncrana is a remarkable town. It's like the TARDIS. You walk in through the front door and you don't realise it just goes on forever and ever. It's the same with some of the other buildings on the main street. So what is it, where are we at in terms of how it's run, who looks after what, the future funding, for an example? Is this commercially independent, or do we need the state to start, you know, seeing what you're doing here and back it like they should?
Well, I think so. We do need.
Yeah, well, this is what it ultimately came down to. We couldn't get any funding to get this youth club up and going again.
But now it's built. Is that still the case? Because I know you did reference that. But it's...
Sometimes building it can actually hinder any future grant aid. And the reason for that is, well, you can stand on your own 2 feet. You don't need us, you know. But time is more important than anything else. And generations were going to be lost. So we had to carry on and do it ourselves. But we are hoping now, though, and after speaking to both Fiona and Parry McLaughlin, is that we could get funding to support at least a youth worker for here. I mean, we have a 16-channel CCTV system, and the children are very safe here. There's an underfloor heating system. It's perfectly safe in that sense. All we need now is a Garda vetted, very good youth worker who can coordinate events and all of that. If we could even achieve that, and then the big hall at the back, which is Ursula and myself are both passionate about, because it was going to bring the big axe to Buncrana, is we want to be able to get grant aid for that. Now, that's going to be about £1 million to restore that. That was a very big entity, huge asset to the town, lost in the fire. A lot of technology going to go into it, bars and seating and everything. And there's a sprung dance floor down there, which dates back to 1958. We'd like to reinstitute that, you know. So we do need support. And that's one of the main reasons we called Highland Radio here, to get the word out that this is like a beacon in Buncrana, the plaza. Everybody knows it. It's the most central building in the town. Funding is absolutely essential to complete the last piece.
And I think, Ursula, it's proof of concept, right? Because you've got it open as far as it is, and you hope that, you know, others now see the vision and see the future, particularly in relation maybe to the hall, etc.
Yeah, hopefully, Greg, that's what will happen. As Christopher said, we have the hall upstairs open and now the youth club, and hopefully
so
thirdly.
What's the hall then? What happens there? That's open now.
Yeah,
right.
Small
okay.
old hall upstairs where we hold all dance classes and fitness classes, kids' birthday parties, the social dance on a Saturday night, and then as I say, it's extended downstairs now here to where the youth club is, where Christopher came on board and was a great support to us.
Yeah, so you know, we can build this up now. We've 2,000 children going to school in Buncrana every day, and they all have lunch money, and we would like them to come up here and support this club and play pool in their lunch break and maybe come here after school. That would be the ideal. If that doesn't happen, we'll figure out some way to balance it out. The activities that we've introduced here, they've come in, we're already seeing what they're interested in and what they're not so interested in. So this is a kind of a voyage of discovery for us, and we're slowly finding our way. We'll find the sustainable model, what that looks like. We'll probably know what it looks like in about 6 months' time. But
parents might also see the benefit in maybe policing screen time, i.e. your PlayStations or your PC, as when they're here. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, there's lots of different options, but it has to find its feet.
Oh, it's a huge benefit for parents. Like, parents can come here now, they can leave their kids playing down in the youth club, and they can sit and have a cup of coffee here in the piano cafe and listen to the piano being played. So,
talk to me about that. Actually, that's an interesting... I was talking to Sharon earlier on, Sharon Graham. It's an interesting concept.
Sharon, I knew Sharon from our days selling furniture. Sharon is an excellent salesperson.
Okay.
And
a brilliant pianist as
I
well,
know,
as it turns
out. That's how we discovered she was able to play piano. She was in the furniture shop and she was playing piano. So she plays piano in hotels, foyers, as a side act of hers. So Sharon, one of the reasons I bought the first glass piano for Buncrana just to be a showpiece at the front door and catch people's attention. And I had this romantic idea that if I had somebody there playing piano, that it would draw people into the cafe. Mm. So I probably have seen it before somewhere in Dublin in my travels or whatever, but it has worked. People are coming in. We're putting a sign up now that anybody who can play a tune on the piano gets a free cup of coffee.
Yes, so, but that has to be to a certain
standard.
You may be able to smash the keys. Go, bring me the coffee.
Well, I don't know if you want to give it a go, Greg.
Okay,
we'll make the put the coffee on.
I've already had full free coffees. I'm starting to get the jitters. Right. Okay. Listen. Anything you want to add? I think it was actually a really good opportunity, Christopher, for you to get two, you know, second public reps in here this morning as well, Parry McLaughlin and Fionnán Bradley, to see firsthand what you're trying to do. Because it makes it, you know, if you can see see it, it makes it a little bit more easy to, and they've committed to working with you in that regard. So
we also, by the way, just to mention, we have a classroom down there that seats 28 kids. Mm. We have an 85-inch plasma TV.
It's not going to be a plasma TV. I think you're showing your age there.
Oh, probably you're right, sorry. Yeah,
it's
yeah,
a big, wide LCD.
Sorry, you're right.
I had a look at it myself.
Shows you my age, yeah. So at least I didn't say cathode ray tube. Anyway, so we can teach the kids anything we want. So if anybody wants to come in and put on a class for the kids, whether it's teach them art or teach them the dangers of things, and like namely drugs and drink, the classroom is there for that as well. We've only softly opened this day last week, so everything is very, very fresh. We don't know where this journey is going to take us, but we know we did have a youth club here before, and it did work, but it had no funding at all and none of the investment like we have here now. So we're hopeful that this will be a success.
So at 12 o'clock today, the Piano Cafe is open.
Yes.
It's open now, isn't it?
Yep.
It is open now, and you can call in, and there is some free food available.
12 to 2, yeah.
12 to 2. And then the grand opening this evening at 7.
7 p.m., yeah.
All right, brilliant.
There'll be a professional pianist playing this evening, and the parents, I'd like parents particularly to come in.
Yeah.
There'll be wine and there'll be food for the parents, and they can walk around the youth club and see what their kids have and what they can invest in, you know.
Okay, so all three of you, thank you very much. Congratulations, Brian, on what you've done here. It's beautiful. And well done to you too, Ursula and Christopher. Right, thank you very much indeed. Now, just to give you a heads up that there's a sister podcast to this program. It's called The Greg Hughes Podcast. And last Friday, we had a very important episode released. And it was to mark the 10th anniversary since the Buncranapier tragedy. On the evening, 10 years ago tomorrow, five members of one family, Sean McGrotty, Mark, Evan, Ruth and Jodie Lee, all lost their lives when their car slipped into Loch Swilly. Rena Ann, her dad saved her. He was able to, Sean was able to hand her out the window in the last moments before the car was submerged, and handed Rena to David Walsh. And I had the pleasure of chatting to Rena and her mum as part of a podcast recording. And you can listen to that right now on our website, highlandradio.com, or on Spotify and iTunes. And if you are going on Spotify or iTunes, please give us a like, subscribe, maybe leave a rating or a comment. It's very much appreciated. This week's podcast guest is Martin O'Donnell. Now, Martin O'Donnell has a 65-year legacy of delivering bread. He's been a pillar of the community who witnessed the evolution of County Donegal from the driver's seat of his Bedford van, his famous Bedford van. And he hung up the keys by his own decision at the age of 90 last year, marking the end of an extraordinary 65-year career. I'm going to try play a clip of this podcast now. It may or may not work. But anyway, I was chatting to Martin, and of course, just on a lighter note, with travelling so many miles as he did in and around Fanna, there had to be the odd near miss or close shave here or there. Oh no, I can't hear Martin and I wanted to. Right, okay. Well, anyway, suffice to say, it's well worth listening to. Is there a desktop audio? Oh, it's this one. Right, okay. I beg your pardon. You know. Sorry, I didn't realise. Here we go, Martin. Collisions, any crashes? Or
There were two collisions, actually.
Right.
There was one there at the Woodland School there, where I was up to, we collected the bread up here, you know. A fellow came up and one morning was when I was going down, and as a small van with me and a trailer on. And at the, you know, the school there, at Woodland School,
yep.
You know, I'd bend above it.
Yep.
He came round there and his chairs went spinning round and hit the van, my van door, and he knocked the trailer off the off the hook, you know, with the
My God.
And it's funny, the other accident was the manager of the bakery at the time was James Ellams.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you heard Ellams.
Mm-hmm.
He collided with me at the old school in Mulford. He came round and the wrong side of the road too, you know. But thank God there was nobody was hurt or nothing, you know.
You had a passenger on for one of those collisions, did you?
I
you had a passenger on. Was that the woman from the lift?
Oh, that was a that was another one I was named
by. By the way, can we just say Martin didn't crash a lot? We're just talking about the couple of times he did, and most of them weren't his fault.
None of them was my fault. Okay. You know, not bummer or bragging about
no,
it.
No, it's all right.
That was a different. That was a late work I was doing before I started on my own job steady. You know, I was doing it. What do you call this?
The log cabin.
Yeah.
I wheeled him up. This was for a wee woman at Mulford McBride that had a bakery in Mulford, you know.
Yeah.
And she had no driver or other, so she said, well, do you want to go out for on a Saturday? I only did odd days for her, you know, because you're stuck. And the first thing I heard was a rattle, and the next thing I seen, the wheel was going flying in this.
Oh, my God.
And she went on backwards and over the dish. Down below, the rubber. The other side of the rubber. And this old woman, she was heading up to, she's from Dunlow. I don't know, asked me to give her a lift up. But we're done backwards, you know, and the sliding doors and
they opened.
They opened up too, you know. And we're into the field. And it's funny, I don't know what happened to her, because we left, was only very young at the time, you know. We left, and I got left out when I went out to the road, and a wee man there named Wardy, he used to deliver turf to the Mulford Bakery, you know, when there was blowing the fires. And he came along with Laurie, and there was another fellow on along with me too. He came up and took the tours up to Mulford. But the woman went, I don't know her, and I never thought to her. You know, I was really young at the time. It's only afterwards I thought, you know, it.
Always a bother to her that time. Looking for her handbag.
Yeah.
But we left her out on her handbag, and I don't know if she got the handbag or not.
I'm sure she did. And she carried on our journey too. I'm sure, no doubt about it at all. So when did you retire from delivering bread, Martin?
Only retired there October then. Yeah.
And why?
Well, I suppose the reason was I got a bit nervous when I was on up here in Letterkenny, you know, what's happening.
I don't blame you.
So I thought I'd just...
Just the time was right to...
Time was right that way, and you know what, I didn't want to have another accident or anything, you know.
And that was our chat with this week's podcast guest, Martin O'Donnell. It's a nice casual conversation. I think sometimes you can be too stuffy. Sometimes it's nice just to sit down and have the crack. And that's what we did. And the full interview with Mr. Martin O'Donnell is available on our website from 11 a.m, or you can subscribe and listen on Spotify or iTunes, whichever suits you or your device better. All right, you're very welcome back to the programme. Now, we are going to take a little bit of music because we have the two bucks in studio with us. Cian McGonigal, good morning to you, Cian.
How's it going, Greg?
It's going fantastic. And also Killian McCarran, good morning.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping?
Keeping grand, busy as always, thankfully.
Yep. I was chatting to Oshin in Philadelphia. You two bucks are just back from Boston. What was that like?
Boston was class. We're over for Paddy's Day. Good on the showman, Orrin McGonigal from Avul there. There's a few bars, so we were lucky enough they brought us over for the weekend and got to play a few tunes, have a bit of crack. And
was it a good crack?
It was a great weekend.
I'd say it's fantastic, is it? Yeah.
Great weekend. A few too many beers, maybe. But
sure, listen, that's part of it. We've been talking about beer all morning in one form or other. I don't know what's going on. But anyway, yeah, and the audience are just there. You don't have to win them round, are you?
No.
They're just ready to go.
They are. Yeah. They love it.
Okay, which mic's that, Joe? That one here. It just seems a bit low. 3, is it? Okay. Right, so what are you going to play for us?
We're going to do a wee acoustic version of Riptide by Vance Joy.
Right, let's go. Get straight into it.
And the dark. Well, I was scared of pretty girls and starting conversations. Now all my friends turning green. You're the magician's assistant in a dream. Taking away to the dark side, and I wanna be your left hand man. I love you when you're singing that song, yeah. I got a lump in my throat, cause you're gonna take the words. Life. This guy decides to quit his job and head to New York City. His cowboy's running from himself. He's living on the highest shelf. Now, oh, 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 and the car won't start. Lady running down to the riptide. Taking away to the dark side, and I wanna be your left hand man. I love you when you're singing that song, yeah. I got a lump in my throat, cause you're gonna sing the words wrong. I just gotta know if you're gonna stay. Well, I just gotta know. Well, I can't have it any other way. And I swear she's destined for the screen. The closest thing to Michelle Pfeiffer that you've ever seen. Running down to the riptide, taking away to the dark side, and I wanna be your left hand man. I love you when you're singing that song, yeah. I got a lump in my throat, cause you're gonna sing the words wrong.
Well done, lads. That was 90% of Riptide. No, I'm only joking. Thank you. That's where he's playing locally. I can see why he's went down a bomb, by the way, overseas.
We're playing all over the place, you know, all around Anishon, Donegal, venturing down to Sligo, Mayo, Galway, yeah. Up around Derry and Belfast.
I can see why he's getting so many gigs. Well done. It's brilliant to see that you're getting the gigs and the coverage that you deserve. Thanks so very much
for calling down
to us. It's a real treat. Well, right. We'll be back with our goodbyes from Buncrana after our last break. Okay, a dry day with plenty of sunshine, turning a little hazy at times in places. Temperatures 13 to 16 degrees. Finally, Christopher, thanks again for having us along. Just give people a very quick reminder. 12 o'clock, 12 till 2, free food in the beautiful Plaza Piano Cafe, and then the official opening at 7 p.m. You want the youth, you want their parents, their guardians, everyone's welcome.
Yeah, everybody to come along and show their support for what will be the new youth club for Buncrana, right in the heart of the town.
Again, thanks so much for having us. That's where we leave it for this week, this show. We'll be back with you, all being well, on Monday morning. Have a fantastic weekend, everybody. But stay safe and stay tuned. John Bresson's Around the Northwest next.